This is I'm Listening, presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health and Choices NH Addiction Recovery Services. Riverbend wants you to know the treatment works. For more information, check out riverbendcmhc.org. So to be joined on the program right now by Jeff Stewart. He is the Project First Director and is going to talk to us a little bit about Project First is. He's with the Concord Fire Department. Jeff, how are you?
Well, good afternoon. Thank you very much for having me. Appreciate it.
Appreciate joining us for the show. So let's start off with a discussion of what Project First is.
Sure. So Project First is a grant initiative that came from the FR CARA 2016. And I know abbreviations like crazy. So for those listening, that's the First Responders Comprehensive and Addiction Recovery Act from 2016. It was a federal legislation. They created this grant and this block of money, and SAMHSA, which is the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration at the federal level, administers it. The state of New Hampshire applied and got $3.1 million in Project First through that grant. And what that allows is first responders to initiate recovery support and treatment. That's what FIRST stands for, first responders initiating recovery support and treatment. And what we do, there's three primary goals. The first goal, of course, is to educate the public and first responders about substance use disorder, opioid use disorder. The second goal is to help reduce opioid overdose death with the distribution of naloxone, which is Narcan. The brand name is Narcan. The generic name is naloxone. And the third goal is to collaborate with local agencies to help people get into meaningful treatment and recovery. That's kind of a broad goal, but that's the overall grant goals. Concord Fire Department secured in February of 2019 a portion of that money to create Concord Fire Department's Project First, and I came on board in April of 2019, April 29th. And we have been working this grant since. We have been distributing naloxone. We've been providing various educational classes, both to individuals, community organizations, other public safety agencies on substance use disorder, opioid use disorder, how to use naloxone, how to perform hands-only CPR, those types of educational things. And I think what makes Concord Fire Department's Project First different is that we actually go ahead and meet with the person who overdoses or overdosed or has an opioid or a substance use disorder issue. We engage them in conversations. We assess where they're at in their stages of change. And then we go ahead and identify any barriers. Why aren't they in treatment? We identify those barriers that's preventing them to go into treatment. We work with them to reduce those barriers. And when they're ready, we facilitate them in the treatment. So that's where Concord Fire almost provides a level of case management as well as direct intervention with the person who's suffering from substance use disorder. That's the grant in a nutshell.
So I think this is such an important program for a number of reasons, but I want to start off with, you know, just a discussion of how the fire department has changed, you know, over the years.
Sure.
Where, you know, the fire aspect of the fire department is, you could fill me in as the percentage basis if you have it offhand, but I would say it is a fairly small percentage of what actually takes place at the fire department at this point in time. You're basically an emergency response entity, and that emergency, those emergencies are, you know, generally like slips and falls, but also a large degree of substance misuse and mental health issues.
Absolutely. So back it up a little bit. Here in Concord, Concord proper, Concord Fire Department provides both your fire suppression and fire prevention services as well as your emergency medical services. And they respond to approximately 9,000 calls a year for service, and that's both fire issues, you know, somebody's house catches on fire, they have a various type of fire-related emergency, and then, of course, the emergency medical side of things. And we provide, there's four stations, there's four engines, fire engines, two ladder apparatus, and three ambulances on duty 24/7 within the city. So that's how they provide the both fire and emergency services protection or public service component of public safety. And it's pretty involved. And our ambulance services are manned at the paramedic or staffed at the paramedic level. So they're all paramedics providing advanced life support for the ambulance service within the city. And they're part of Concord. They are firefighter / paramedics. So here in Concord, all of our firefighters are emergency medical technicians. And then there's a subset that are firefighters and paramedics.
And when you're looking at the FIRST program specifically, one of the key aspects is the fact that you do provide that kind of caseworker type of element, in my view, because back in the throes of the pandemic, one of the major concerns is that, and I'm interested to hear if this has changed with the introduction of this program, is that very often you were serving the same individuals over and over and over again. And that was a frustration on the part of paramedics. It was a frustration on the part of the community that, the same individuals were overdosing, over and over again. And obviously the job is to save each human being. And that is what the what you signed up for. But you certainly, there was a frustration. There's not progress in that individuals were not getting into treatment, were not getting better. What type of evidence have you seen that that has, in fact, changed?
So I think it has changed. It has improved. We still have recidivism. We still have frequency, high-end users of the emergency medical services for a variety of reasons. Obviously, substance use disorder is one of those reasons. But I think the advantage is there's been this collaborative effort between Concord Fire Department, the Concord Doorway Program, which is facilitated between Riverbend and Concord Hospital, to really work with these patients and help identify those barriers. Many of the patients, first issues, they didn't have insurance, so that was a challenge. They didn't feel or didn't appreciate that there is such a thing as treatment for their issues. So a lack of knowledge of treatment options and how treatment works. There's an educational component there. The substance use disorder in and of itself becomes the driving force of that individual. And that's a very strong driving force. So when somebody decides or is ready for treatment, they've come a long way. And that is a very difficult decision and process to go through. So with this collaborative effort between the Doorways and Concord Hospital, Riverbend, the other agencies within the Concord area that help both provide treatment and support measures for people who are in or suffering from substance use disorder, that has improved dramatically in the last couple of years. And I think we have a challenge going on right now with COVID that has certainly taken a toll on a lot of these collaborative efforts. And that is a conversation in and of itself at a different time. That just has posed another challenge to us as we're mitigating and trying to work with these patients who are suffering. And it's not just the patient that's suffering. It's their immediate family members. Mm-hmm. They're all part of this whole problem and this whole underlying disorder. So they're fully involved in it, and they're going through suffrage as well and having challenges, and there's all kinds of layers of both mental health and substance use disorder. But while we're on this subject, one of the things that we've learned in the last probably 2 to 3 years that's really come to fruition is this trifecta. And the trifecta is undiagnosed or undertreated mental health and substance use disorder compounded with homelessness. And there's really this trifecta going on between homelessness and substance use disorder and undiagnosed or undertreated mental health issues. And they really feed upon each other. And that's becoming more evident and more clear in the last probably 18 months with various agencies within the state, not just here in Concord. This is a statewide issue that are really starting to delve into that trifecta and working on it. And they're doing things, other harm reduction techniques and things like that.
Yeah, I think you're right to bring that up. And I think it's a problem here in New Hampshire, and it's a significant problem, across the country. And to me, the most important question to ask when dealing with issues of homelessness, of substance misuse, is why. And why is the individual, in this predicament at this point in time? And once you start to figure that out, you, in most circumstances, in my view, get to the mental health piece. And you know, you mentioned COVID, and certainly there's varying degrees of mental health. And I think one of the most important conversations to have in regards to mental health is the fact that you cannot just, you know, sweep everybody under the mental health umbrella and assume that everyone is the same. There's varying aspects of mental health. But I do think that it helps for individuals to understand mental health when you do recognize that we're all struggling from a mental health perspective at this point in time. And there's mental health and mental illness. And, you know, you, I think that everyone kind of has an understanding of what it's like to, you know, be depressed, to have anxiety about our times. And then you can have that understanding of what is it like, you know, if that's times 10, and if it's racing thoughts, if it leads to mania, if it leads to, you know, individual having other issues. So I think
Let's take that, if you don't mind for one second, let's take that with they're dealing with that particular situation and they're unable to get treatment or unable to get medication. So they turn to self-medication and that could be their entry point down the substance use disorder complexity. Because they found that by utilizing X substance, that made them feel better, short-term or long-term. And then the, that whole substance expounds and expands and expands and becomes, develops into a disorder in and of itself. But the, to your point earlier, the root cause analysis is possibly an undiagnosed and or undertreated mental illness that's been compounded by continuing substances through perhaps a self-medication avenue.
And, you know, if an individual has lost everything and is in a circumstance where they, you can certainly understand why substances are so appealing to them, but it creates
takes that pain away.
And I think that that's really important, Jeff, is that, you know, we went from a time period in the 80s where, you know, there was the Just Say No campaign. And, you know, that's ridiculous. You have to understand why a person does certain things. And you also have to acknowledge that it's going to take place. And you have to have real conversations with people about, you know, about substances. And just like, you know, when you hear the drug commercials on TV and there's 15 seconds of glory and excitement and everything's great, and then there's 45 seconds of side effects, the same thing happens with individuals and substance misuse. In that there are some people where they can just have a couple drinks and that's it. And there's others who go in a completely different direction. There's some individuals that can take prescription drugs and it works well for them. And there's others where it leads to a lifetime of being addicted and then trying to figure out how to continue to feed that addiction moving forward. So I think it's important to for everybody to recognize their own mental health and to recognize the circumstances and times, you know, that we live in. And I think that, you know, one of the things I'm interested to hear from you is, you know, is this a program that is unique to Concord, or are there other, you know, best practices being assembled across the country so that, you know, we can address it, you know, really on the front end, which is what you're doing, but also on the back end so that we can have, you know, the real conversations in regards to prevention that need to take place moving forward?
Right. So a couple of things to that. In New Hampshire, Project First, there's 11 agencies, public safety agencies that are participating, and they're doing three levels of involvement. First level is what we call a leave behind, where they respond to an overdose and they leave a naloxone kit, an opioid overdose, and they leave a naloxone kit with the individual that has some treatment information in it. Second level would be they do that and then follow up with a phone call and or visit by someone like myself who just ensures that they got the naloxone, ensures they know how to use it, ensures they know how to get help if they so choose. And then the third level is what Concord Fire is doing by that whole case management component and really engaging those people. So those are the three levels of Project First, and there's 11 agencies currently in New Hampshire participating. On the nationwide level, and because of my business and my work, not only with Concord Fire, but my other work in public safety and substance use disorder. There's various programs throughout the nation that are using team approaches. So in addition to somebody from the public safety, there's also somebody from mental health. There's somebody who specifies in or specializes in substance use disorder doing outreach and work. There are actual pre-hospital agencies, public safety agencies that are inducing or utilizing MAT, medication-assisted treatment, in the pre-hospital setting. So they've engaged with the patient from an overdose-type situation and or a referral agency, and they're bringing treatment to them. So the concept of meeting the patient where they're at or meeting the client where they're at. There are some programs both in the Midwest, and actually Connecticut is exploring and pursuing a large grant where MAT is being provided through the paramedic level of care to the individuals, and then case managing them from that aspect, which is pretty interesting. It's going to be interesting to see the data as that unfolds in the next 2 years.
Yeah, just one thing on that. What is, in your view, the success of medication-assisted treatment? And are there, you know, side effects to that as well, particularly, you know, long-term usage? Or can an individual use the medication-assisted treatment to address the addiction issue in the short term, or does it need to be long term?
So my bias is combined therapy, and I will come right out and say that I am an advocate for combined therapy. If somebody wants to go strictly down a therapeutic route, I support that 100%. But I do not support strict medication alone treatment modality. So my bias is combined therapy. When I say combined therapy, it's both medications, be it for mental health or substance use disorder, as well as the therapeutic modalities, be it CBT or you know, cognitive behavioral therapy or various other therapies involved. And the reason I say that is we have evidence to show it, which is what I find fascinating in the substance use disorder field nowadays, is we have the technology and science to actually show the impact to brain chemistry that has occurred in these patients who have substance use disorder and who have a particular substance. And we can show it from what we call SPECT, S-P-E-C-T type scans, and prove the impact to neurological functioning and neurochemistry. And that is where I think MAT becomes advantageous, because you're going to pull them out of a crisis. You're going to get them on a medication for, in the big picture, it's a short-term medication application. You're going to get them on that medication, help to balance some of that brain chemistry, and at the same time, work them through the therapeutic model so that they can rewire. So I want to stabilize with medication, stabilize their brain chemistry, and then through the therapeutic approaches, rewire, for lack of a better descriptor, rewire that brain chemistry into a healthier process and a healthier individual in the long run. So there is plenty of evidence, both public health models and CDC and a few other, the Society for American Addiction Medicine, those groups have published lots of information out there, plenty of researched, evidence-based, peer-reviewed, showing the advantages of medication-assisted therapy combined with your mental health therapies. And I want to stress that. And I admit, that's my bias, mm-hmm. but I think it's a combined therapeutic approach, and there is success, and there is long-term recovery possibilities.
That's Jeff Stewart joining us with Project First. He's the director of that for the Concord Fire Department. And in conclusion, you know, we heard really during that 2016, 17, and into 18 time frame consistently about the opioid epidemic. And, you know, Chief Osgood with the Concord Police Department joins us on a regular basis. And he really first started talking about that in the 2013-14 time frame. And is there a feeling in your view that things have gotten better in that realm? Or has it just been completely pushed aside by COVID? There's a concern, as we talked about before, in regards to individuals' mental health, and that that is taking place behind closed doors, and that also substances are being used at a very high level behind closed doors. So the question is, we don't really know as much now, in my view, because of the COVID environment that we are living in, and basically it's been, you know, all COVID all the time pretty much for, you know, the last 9 months at this point. So do you feel there's a potential that the opioid epidemic that we heard about so much is actually perhaps, despite programs like yours, perhaps worse at this point, given what's taking place?
So my personal opinion is I don't think it's worse necessarily. I think we ultimately might see some reduction in opioid overdose death because we have such a high volume of naloxone distribution and availability, which is a harm reduction technique. But I do think that, you know, typical news cycle, it's 24/7, and what's flashy today is not necessarily flashy tomorrow. And to your point regarding COVID, that's been the nation's focus, justifiably so. But I think we lost focus a little bit on the substance use disorder. And I don't want it to only be opioid use disorder. It's a broader subject. We know for a fact that during this COVID, our alcohol overdoses have increased significantly, both in the city and within the state of New Hampshire. We also know that our methamphetamine, not necessarily methamphetamine overdoses, but our methamphetamine or stimulant utilization within the city and New Hampshire as a whole has increased dramatically in the last 2 years. And I think a lot of that data is being walked over or missed because our daily focus, our 24/7 focus has been on the COVID situation. So we're making a little bit of ground. I think our therapeutics are better. I think our treatment options are better. I think we've done a great job on making insurance coverage better. We've got plenty of work to do, lots of parity issues to outline, but it's getting better. But I think there's a little shifting of focus because of the current COVID situation. That's my personal opinion, but I've been doing this for over 30 years, and I've been working in the substance use disorder field specifically since 98.
What's interesting is, and I don't think that any of us, should downplay the significance of COVID because it is a pandemic. But it was remarkable the other day that, you know, one of the first times during the pandemic, there was actually more COVID deaths than heart disease deaths on a particular day. And, you know, I think that, again, we all need to be cognizant. We all need to wear our masks, et cetera. And I'm not saying that COVID should be downplayed. What I am saying is that other things should get more focus and attention than that they do.
And I would agree with you on that more focus issue.
If we spent like, you know, 10% of the time that we've spent on COVID on cancer, or 10% of the time that we spent on COVID on heart disease, or on substance misuse, or mental
suicidal
health
ideation.
Right. I mean, it's pretty nuts when you think about that. And that, granted, COVID is bad, but these other things are just as bad and are viewed in a completely different sense. I mean, cancer and heart disease and mental health, the effect that has on individuals, substance misuse, all these things are so, so important. And you know, they're so commonplace, if you will, they just kind of get brushed to the backdrop.
Right. 22 veterans a day, on average, are committing suicide. Suicide's 10th leading cause of death in the United States. 22 veterans a day, 4 to 5 public safety people per day, and 1 active duty military person per day. And those statistics are VA, Veterans Affairs, Department of Defense, and the CDC. And those are all, that's where that statistic comes from, 10-22-5-1. So I agree with you 100%. We can't take our eye off the ball. I really appreciate radio shows like yours that kind of keep that focus going. I just want to put one more plug out there when we talk, just to because I do get pushback when I'm talking out in the public about naloxone utilization. Mm-hmm. And currently we're giving naloxone out for free, which is Narcan is the brand name. It's the opioid overdose or the opioid antidote for an opioid overdose. It prevents death. I get some pushback. They're like, well, why are we giving it for free? Well, naloxone distribution is a harm reduction technique, and it does not treat opioid use disorder. It treats a side effect, which is death. Mm-hmm. So I'm not providing free medicine for opioid use disorder. We are providing naloxone, which is a antidote to the overdose, which leads to the death. So I just want people to kind of consider it from a harm reduction technique. If the person is dead, then there's no hope for treatment. If I can reverse their overdose, keep them alive, there's hope to get them in treatment. We know treatment will work down the road. So it's a harm reduction technique that we utilize.
Well, Jeff, appreciate your time, appreciate your work, and I look forward to chatting again soon.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you having me on. Have a great day.
You as well. That is Jeff Stewart joining us here on I'm Listening, presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health and Choices NH Addiction Recovery Services. Riverbend wants you to know that treatment works. Jeff joining us from the Concord Fire Department, where he is the Project First Director. And again, this hour of the program presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health.